Hey, everybody have a good week. It's been okay. CEG, how's CEG doing? You guys, more tests, midterms, homework, more chance to excel. It's all good. Not so good. Hey, we're glad you're here. Man, you know, as you saw from the pictures, we had a wonderful week. Just the beauty of creation, everything. And we were in Los Angeles. Now, Los Angeles is a nice place to visit, all right? It's a great place to visit, but you don't want to live there, all right? Too many people, too much traffic, perfect weather every day, all day. Gets boring, the weather's so nice. And, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, in a couple of months, I may be regretting what I just said when the weather turns here, and it gets cold, and it starts snowing, and my face begins to freeze off. I may change my mind about L.A. But, you know, it's great being gone, but it's also awesome being back home. There's no place like home. And as we're traveling, I don't know what it is, but it seems like as we get ready to go and make our travels and flights and things, that I have an increased sense of awareness about all things. That I'm always trying to keep on the lookout to make sure that we don't lose anything on our travel, all right? I'm very paranoid about losing stuff. And so before we go, I've got an exhaustive packing list I go through and I check off and make sure we've got everything before we leave home. And then once we get ready to get on the plane, I always make sure, look around, all right, do we have everything, look around the airport, because I don't want to leave anything in the airport before we get on the plane. Then we make our flight, then when we're getting ready to get off, I check my wallet, check, wallet here, books here, check, cell phone, check, everything. Then I start asking Carol, you have your purse? Yes, Scott. All right, do you have your wallet? Yes, Scott. Do you have your cell phone? Yes, Scott. I say, okay, don't hate on me. I'm just trying to make sure we don't lose anything. And I'm not so sure why I get like that. You know, it may be because, especially when we're traveling, you know, you lose something, it's inconvenient, and then you have to, you know, try to. I think it's mainly because I'm really a cheap person, and I hate to have to pay for something that I would not have had to pay for if I hadn't lost it. But I hate losing things. And God hates losing things too. And back in creation, when sin entered the world, God lost humanity. And all the rest of history is about the God who's searching for us, seeking to draw us, bring us back to himself. You know, last week we talked about, you know, two weeks ago, our series, year one, that one person that you know, that one man, one woman, one person you work with, neighbor, someone you have a relationship with, that one person who doesn't know God, who's far from him, who God is looking for. And we talked about that God was like a shepherd who was looking for a lost sheep. And he left all the other sheep behind to find the lost sheep. And today we're going to see how God is like a woman. God, the love of God is like a woman who lost a valuable coin and worked feverishly to find it. Jesus is talking with the crowds, the people, about God's love and his relationship with us. And we pick up our story today in Luke chapter 15, verse 8. Luke chapter 15, verse 8. He's talked about the shepherd, the lost sheep. And then he says, or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. All right. The woman has 10 silver coins. They belong to her. They are her possession. She owns them. You see, a person cannot lose something unless they first own it. Some object, some unless they first own something, they cannot lose it. You know, I cannot lose my cell phone unless I first own a cell phone. I know everybody's got cell phones, right? You can't lose a cell phone unless you first own a cell phone. Now, I don't know about you, but the Boyd family spends a whole lot of time looking around our homes for our home for lost cell phones. You know what I'm talking about. You know, you got your cell phone, and in fact, this morning, all right, this is not my cell phone, okay? This is Carol's cell phone. I do not carry this cell phone. The reason I have her cell phone, because I lost my cell phone when he left home, and I couldn't find it in enough time to come. But when we lose our cell phone at home, you'll often come by our house and seeing the Boyds grab their landline or another cell phone and calling the cell phone that they've lost because they can't find it. And so we call it and we run upstairs and do we hear it ringing? Oh, not upstairs. We run downstairs. Do we hear it ringing and calling our cell phone that we lost? Now, heaven forbid if we've got in silent mode, because we're toast then. Because if it's in silent mode and all the sounds are turned down, we have to wait till it gets dark. Because after it gets dark, you can call your cell phone and it lights up in the dark. And then if you're lucky, you can move everything off and you move to the darkness to find the cell phone as it's lighting up in the dark. You know, you can't lose something unless you first own it. And in the beginning, God owned everything. God created everything. Everything belongs to God. And most especially, God created Adam and Eve. They belong to Him. In the first book of the Bible, in the book of Genesis chapter 1, as God created man and woman, he created them in a special way. Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. It says, "So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them." In the Latin, the Imago Dei, the image of God. That God put this image that comes from God, that image that belonged to God first, and He gave it to humanity, to human beings. And it says it twice. God created in His own image, in the image of God, He created Him, male and female, He created them. Twice it talks about that we have been given the image of God. And there's a great debate on what this means. What is the image of God? Is it in the physical sense that some way, shape, or form, we carry the physical likeness of God in some way? Or is it a spiritual sense that because God is spirit, He's all spiritual, that we carry the spiritualness of God, this image in us? Or maybe something it has to do with eternity, that God is eternal because we have God's image. We will have the possibility of eternity with Him. That this is the image of God. But whatever it is, whatever it means in its totality, it is understood that because we have God's image on us and in us, that we belong to God. You know, when a young man and a young woman begin dating and fall in love, they get engaged, right? They get engaged and he proposes and hopefully she says yes. And as they're going along, and then what's the first thing the young man does after he proposes and she says, what is the first thing he does? He better do. What does he do? No, no, no. He gives her a ring. He has a ring. He kneels down, pulls the ring out, pops the question, "Will you marry me?" He gives her a ring. Why does he give her a ring? Why does this young man give this young woman a ring? Say again? Because he wants to? He gives her a ring to show that this is not just any young woman. This is who? Who is she now? She is his young woman. She belongs to him. And he belongs to her. It's the relationship. She is now his. She is off limits to any other young man. She is his. And not only does she belong to him, guess what? He belongs to her, and he is off limits to any other young woman. They belong to each other. They have made that commitment of love that anyone else is off limits. Anyone else is off limits to him. They belong to each other. And in the beginning, Adam and Eve belonged to God. He gave them his image. He gave them, that was their ring, to show that they were his and he was theirs. It was a relationship that was to be forever. But sin separated Adam and Eve from God, and God lost them. The father lost his children. And so he began to look for them, to search for them. Back to Luke 15, verse 8. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? It was real easy to lose a coin or a whole bunch of coins back in that time. For a peasant's home back in the Middle East at that time, it was not very well lit. It would often just have maybe one, perhaps two windows on the side of the home, sort of circular in shape, about 18 inches or so in diameter to let the light in. And the floors of the home were packed mud, covered with reeds and straw and things like that to try to keep the dust down. And so it's easy to lose coins in this kind of environment. And she lost a coin. The light wasn't very good. The condition was really horrible, so she began to sweep and to look carefully for this coin that she had lost. Now, the coin, the Bible says it was a drachma. And that's roughly equivalent to 15 cents in our day and age. All right, if you know, inflation, whatever, figure it all in, it's roughly equivalent to 15 cents in our day. So she had 10 of these 15-cent coins. So she had roughly $1.50 in her pocket. And she lost 15 cents. Now, I know some people, they can lose 15 cents out of their pocket, and they won't stop. They won't waste their time to bend down and pick up 15 cents. Now, if it's me, I'm on the ground. Okay, I lose 15 cents, I'm there. But a lot of people, they lose 15 cents, they keep on going. And I don't know anyone who would sweep an entire house trying to find 15 cents. A lot of people wouldn't spend time trying to find $1.50. You know, and some people wouldn't even spend time, $15, sweeping a whole house. Who would do that? Well, a lot of people wouldn't, but you know what? 15 cents back in that day and age, when money was scarce and people were poor, 15 cents were a people who lived on the edge of starvation. Was equivalent to $1,000. It represented food. It represented a family that would be kept from starving. was it worth sweeping the whole house to find 15 cents? I guess it's all a matter of perspective. And the greater the value of an object, the greater the value of this thing that is lost, the greater the intensity of the effort of the person that they will exert in trying to find the item, the thing that is lost. And Jesus is teaching the Israelite, the Jewish people, a new thing about God here. And this is something different that they did not fully understand. See, in the Jewish mind, they envisioned God being the God sort of out here. And if a person, for some reason, became convicted or felt guilty of their lives and the things they'd done in their sin, that they could, in a sense, come crawling to God and begging for mercy and forgiveness, and that they would come to God and throw themselves at his feet. And if God, if they're lucky, God may extend to them mercy and kindness and forgiveness. It was always the person who would have to come to God. They never envisioned a God who would come running and searching for them. The God who would, like this one, search and hunt and persevere and look and try to find this person, this his child that has been lost and is far from him, with a passion that just propels his heart because of the love he has for his children. You know, like a person, Todd, somebody you work with, you know, he's annoying, you don't like him. He's an unbeliever, God's looking for him. Or your neighbor, Jennifer, she's an awesome person, very friendly, always talking and things like that, but she doesn't believe in God. God is looking for her. Or Jim, you know, the guy you play ball with, you know, he's a great guy, man, outgoing, really fun, things like that, but he doesn't care anything about God or anything about Jesus. And God is looking, searching for him. The love of God, because of his love for his children that is lost, is so great and so intense, it propels him, it causes him to search for his children, to bring them back into relationship with him. And when we get to the point that we have the love of God, we have that same passion, that same desire in our hearts to go looking for them as well. You know, that is your one. That is that person that God has brought in your life that he needs your help to be used by God to help bring that person back to him. In verse 9, and when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." Isn't that amazing? The second story that Jesus tells ends exactly the way the first story about the shepherd and the lost sheep. When the shepherd finds his lost sheep, he calls all his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found this lost sheep." And here this woman finds this lost coin and she calls together her friends and her neighbors, everyone she has a meaningful relationship with, everyone that knows her, to come together and rejoice with her that she has found this lost coin. There's something about the way God has created us that we just have this innate, incredible desire to share happiness. And Jesus says, in the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. That one man, that one woman, that one person who comes to that point in their lives that they sense that God has been searching for them, and they turn around and they decide that they want to be found. And they say, "Here I am, God. Here I am. Take me. I'm yours. God is searching for you this morning. I want you to know this, God is searching for you. He loves you so much that He even went so far as to send His Son Jesus to die on a cross for you in order that He might find you. And maybe today, maybe right now, is that day that you say, God, I want to be found. I give up. Take me, I'm yours. I'm back. If you will with me right now, just bow your heads and close your eyes. We're going to a time of just, maybe right now you're ready to be found, to begin loving the God who so loves you, to begin loving the God who through Jesus came for you. And there are angels in heaven waiting to throw a homecoming party just for you. For you. And the first step in being found is simply to say, Jesus, I give you my life. Jesus, I give you my life. If right now, in the quietness of this space, you want to say, Jesus, I give you my life, to just come up here and stand beside me, to make public that which is taking place in the depths of your being, to make known to believers that today you want to be found, that you want to give your life to the God who gave His Son's life for you, that you want to follow Him and love Him as much as He loves you.